the thing about social media that frustrates marketers to no end is you can't buy attention. And that if you have no choice but to think and act small, then you won't try to say, well, here's a 100,000 person community, how can we buy it? What you will do instead is realize, here's four people, how can we amaze them? And that change in posture, that change in attitude, is the single biggest shift that's going on the internet right now.
This is podtech.net. Welcome to Marketing Voices, featuring the fresh perspectives of innovative marketing leaders and examining how social media is changing marketing throughout the world. Here's your host, Jennifer Jones.
Hi, this is Jennifer Jones, and today on Marketing Voices, I have the privilege of speaking with Seth Godin, who is just one of these people that many people don't need an introduction for, but he is a marketer extraordinaire, and he's a prolific author. He's got 7 best-selling books under his belt currently. His latest is called Small is the New Big, and we're going to be talking about that a bit today. And he's also founder and CEO of Yoyodyne, which is a leading interactive direct marketing company, which was sold to Yahoo in 1998. And plus, I also learned by reading about him that he's considered to be one of the 21 speakers for the next century for successful meetings. So for anybody listening to this that they want to talk to him about that at some point, you should feel free to do so. So Seth, with that long introduction, welcome to Marketing Voices.
That was way too long, but thank you for having me.
Well, you are very accomplished. You also have a Stanford MBA. Being here in Palo Alto, California, we are very familiar with Stanford. So what I would really like to do is start first with your perspective on what you feel is the most important takeaway from your newest book, Small is the New Big.
Well, my newest book is actually my oldest book because I've been writing it for more than 7 years. And it is a collection of riffs and rants and blog posts and magazine articles that I realized were sort of fading away because even though the internet never forgets, it's awfully hard to find some stuff after it's up there. So I collected what I think is the best bunch of it and realized that there were some common themes. And I think the biggest theme, and that's why I called the book this, is that big used to matter. Big companies, lots of employees, lots of assets, the ability to have a huge marketing budget and policies and call centers, all those things helped you succeed. And in the last 4 or 5 years, big has become not an asset, but actually an impediment. And small is what helps people succeed. Not necessarily small in size, but thinking small, or even better, acting small. Treating people with respect, being willing to change a policy, having no ad budget so that you're required to make really remarkable products where the word spreads, as opposed to making average products for average people that have to be advertised and hyped. And what we discover is that the best way to get big is to act small, is that being close to the market and treating people like they have a choice, whether they're your employees or your customers, is really the only way to succeed now.
Okay, so give me some examples of people, companies, whatever, that you think are doing this very well.
Well, it always gets me in trouble when I give examples because then, you know, tomorrow some big accounting scandal will occur and that'll be the end of that. But
Take a risk.
if you go ahead and buy something from L.L. Bean and 3 months later you don't like it anymore and you tear the knee open or whatever and you ship it back, they just send you your money back. They don't ask any questions because they understand that the cost of challenging all their very best customers every single time they make a decision like that is far, far greater than the cost of just sending them a new pair of pants. You compare that to, you know, the snafu that hit Dell on Jeff Jarvis's blog, where for months he was screaming and yelling online in public, and no one at Dell had the authority to call him up and just fix the problem. And so there we see the distinction between two companies that might be similarly big in their industries. One, which has a policy and a mindset that says, how would we act if L.L. Bean himself were still around? And the other one that succeeded, at least for a while, on the back of policies.
So how do you feel small is the new big as it relates to social media marketing? Obviously, this show is all about that and trying to really teach marketers about everything in social media, and that now extends beyond just wikis and blogs and podcasts. So try to relate that back to the people that are really thinking about social media.
Well, here's the thing that I want to say to marketers. Most marketers go into marketing because they like being in charge. They like being listened to. They like talking to people who have to listen because they bought an ad. That's why you go into marketing and not, say, ballet. And the thing about social media that frustrates marketers to no end is you can't buy attention. And that if you have no choice but to think and act small, then you won't try to say, well, here's a 100,000-person community. How can we buy it? What you will do instead is realize, here's four people. How can we amaze them? And that change in posture, that change in attitude, is the single biggest shift that's going on the Internet right now. This idea that just because you want something to succeed doesn't mean it will.
Okay, the other thing that I'm wondering as it relates to this is the fear factor then in that, which I think is also, from what I've seen in PodTech and talking to people here and our clients, is especially for sort of the baby boomers, they are really fearful of doing exactly what you're saying because it is so antithetical to how they've always worked. So how do you kind of get them over that hump?
Well, they're afraid of everything. You know, my generation wants to live forever and fully expects that we will, as long as, quote, we don't screw up. And so there are millions of paralyzed middle managers out there who are stuck. And I make my living giving speeches to groups pointing out that the thing they have to fear the most is being stuck, that the riskiest thing to do is to play it safe. What we know is that the organizations, the packaged goods companies, the service organizations, the business-to-business companies that try to do what they did yesterday but a little better are falling behind. And if we take a look at which brands are growing, at which sites are getting more traffic, at which things are getting talked about, at which stuff is getting bought, it's not the people who are using the tactics from 15 years ago. It's people who are playing by a fundamentally different set of rules.
So don't you think that really isn't within the realm, ultimately, of most marketers? Most marketers have to report to a CEO, so isn't that really the CEO's job to get them unstuck and get them feeling comfortable?
Well, one of the things I hear a lot is people saying, my boss won't let me. And what they're really saying is, I went to my boss and I want her to give me complete authority to do what I want, but I don't have any of the blame if it fails. Well, of course your boss won't let you. She's not crazy. That what you need to do is take small risks. Take responsibility for them. If you go to your boss and say, we're going to spend 10% of our budget doing this thing, I know it's a little wacky, and I'll be responsible for what happens. A, you're not going to get fired when it doesn't work. And B, she's going to say, sure, go ahead and do that. Because that's how the company grew in the first place. But if you're sitting around waiting for a memo to come from the corner office that says, go ahead and do what you want, don't worry about it, it's not happening anytime soon.
So do you think this really makes marketing harder or easier? In a sense, it sounds like from your perspective, it might be easier. But I, like I said, as I empathize with those marketers that I come in contact with, it seems like it's harder. So where do you come out on that?
Well, if you want a manual, or if you want to be able to call an agency and say, here's $20 million, solve my problem, it's much, much harder. If, on the other hand, you want to get back to first principles, you want to have more influence in your organization because in this new world, marketing needs to run product development, marketing needs to run customer service, marketing needs to run training and hiring and human resources, because all of those things are marketing now. This is the greatest opportunity for marketers since the invention of television, because what it means is there's a whole new chance to reshuffle the deck. You know, everyone knows about the airline business, which makes it a great example. American, United, Continental, they all played by the rules. And all of them, put together, made less money than JetBlue did last year. Because JetBlue cheated. JetBlue played by a fundamentally different set of rules. Now, you could say it was super risky, but I think they played it safe. I think that putting TVs in the back of the seat instead of putting ads on TV was the smartest thing they ever could have done.
So how do you best listen to your customers?
Well, most of the time you need to ignore your customers because the goal is to get your customers to talk to each other and you need to listen to what they're saying to each other. But, you know, if Henry Ford had listened to his customers, he would have made better buggy whips. And if Thomas Edison had listened to his customers, he would have made brighter candles. The customers want fashion. They want style. They want stories. They want to be led to a place they can't yet imagine. That's your job. That's what you get paid for. Once you've started that process and the customers start whining to each other about something you've done wrong, you need to listen to that and you need to respond to it. But you can't look to your customers for insight and innovation because they don't know how to do that en masse. They don't know how to say, as a group, we really want to go there.
Okay, so this is sort of the first time I've ever done this on Marketing Voices, but I think it's a great idea. I've actually had people respond on my email and the Podtext blog, and they ask questions. So I've got a question here from Doug Howitt, who's a marketing director in the tech sector in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he wants to know this. He says, Seth, you've helped illuminate and define the power of the individual in business. This is kind of a long question. And with the growth of Web 2.0, you've seen more power available for each individual. So have the community splintered, or is each individual now has less absolute power but is a greater share in the now smaller communities?
So let me try to say it a different way. 30 years ago, demographics ruled. You wanted to know the name and address of every person in New York City who had a permit to carry a handgun and a dog. And if you knew that, you could do interesting things. And so there were all these silos. And it was completely bogus, because demographics are irrelevant. Psychographics are what matter. What people do is more important than who they are. Well, there's an infinite number of psychographics out there. There's an infinite number of people who, you know, are interested in Tolkien, but also like backpacking. Or they're into deep sea scuba, but they like reading Thomas Pynchon. And so what we see is that any given individual now has many platforms on which to stand. She can stand up and talk to different micro-communities and be heard. Whereas in the old days, you couldn't be heard. You could even write a letter to the magazine, but it wouldn't get published. Now you can be heard. And super good ideas, or super weird ideas, or what super remarkable ideas spread. So someone goes to a hotel, has a bad experience, makes it into a PowerPoint presentation, it gets seen by 4.5 million people online because it's spread from one micro community to another. And so I think individual consumers have more power than ever before. But even more interesting is that bloggers, the Scovels of the world, have huge amounts of power compared to what they had just 5 years ago. Because what we've seen is this new kind of media middleman, if you will, who can't talk to 50 million people like Dan Rather, but they can certainly talk to 200,000 people with a lot of authority.
So what do you think people like Scovel should do with that? I mean, there's a lot of people that think, well, that's too much power for one individual. They shouldn't be able to do anything with it. I mean, where do you come out on that?
Well, you know, what makes it power? The minute Dan Rather stepped over the line and did something that his viewers thought was reprehensible, he lost his job. The minute a blogger jumps the shark and pitches the fifth thing too often, he's gone. There's a well-known blogger who I unsubscribed to a year ago. His book came out and he blogged it 7 times in one day. He's gone. I can't listen to him anymore talking about himself. He disappeared. He's invisible. I'll never see him again. And so power is an interesting thing. Scovel and others have the power to tell certain kinds of stories to a certain group of people, and that's it. So if you're in this for money, you ought to develop an audience that wants to hear you talk about deals, discounts, and retailing. Or you ought to develop an audience that wants to hear you talk about, you know, which kind of management consulting to buy, because you can make plenty of money selling that information back and forth. If, on the other hand, you want the power to tell stories about spiritual redemption, you're not going to make any money at all, but you're going to have the ability to spread these ideas far and wide.
Well, I feel like we could go on for hours, but I am very conscious of your time. So I just want all of my community here to know that I've been talking to Seth Godin, who's a best-selling author, entrepreneur, and his blog is, I'll let you talk to everyone about where your blog is, because I'd like to make sure everyone knows you that doesn't already know you.
Okay, well, thank you. The best way to find me is to type Seth into Google. And there's also a page I built where there's free ebooks and a summary of my blog from the last several years. And that is squidoo.com, squidoo.com/SETH. Squidoo is my newest project. It's something we're doing to help lots of people both spread ideas and raise money for charity.
Right. I didn't get into that at all because I wanted to get into the other thing. I'm hoping that maybe you'll come back and be a guest and we can talk about that in the future.
Super.
Okay. So for all the listeners and in my community out there, Marketing Voices, May all the voices you hear be marketing voices.